Hour two underway, 7:03 on KHTK. Time for retirement checkup. Call David Hedger at Granite Bay Asset Management Group, 791-1737. Nate Goodyear, Katie Christensen with you right up until 9 o'clock. Dave, taking some time until the new year, and among the things we covered in the first hour, mostly the Kings. They beat the Blazers last night, and DeMarcus Cousins scored 55 points and got unejected from the game. And Katie, I can't stop laughing at the clip of him spitting his mouthpiece at the bench, because the looks on their faces as they track it out of his mouth. Terry Stotts is the only person on that bench that had like an outward type of emotional appeal towards the officials. Like, hey, right, man, did you just see that? Everyone else just kind of watches it and has that look like, ew.
Yeah, like they saw it happen, but they haven't quite processed it in their head yet.
Like they didn't, like they just weren't really quite sure. And, among other things last night, this is how quickly, my fandom can just change with the wind here. But I watched a game last night where not only does the team win in thrilling fashion and in comeback fashion, but, DeMarcus Cousins does everything that we want him to do. And I think Rudy Gay is out of the lineup. Just do it now. Just get rid of the guy. And I look around the league, I'm like, okay, Russell Westbrook is going to damn near average a triple-double this year. James Harden is going to try to average a triple-double this year. Why aren't we just asking DeMarcus to get 55 and 13 every night? Screw it. I mean, if you feel like this team is probably about a 30 win range, why not just hitch everything to that wagon and see if you can't bump that up a little bit? Like, if that, he's certainly capable of it.
Yeah. So this is the conundrum kind of with this situation. And this is why it's kind of the same thing as like the last job in the world that I ever want is to be an official in any professional sport. Heck, and even in, you can take it all the way down to junior high. Like, it's just not a job that there has any appeal to me, because you're never going to be able to make everyone happy. And no matter what, half the people are always going to think that you're wrong. And then you take it a step further into say, maybe the second to last job I would ever want is to be a front office executive that's making, calls on rosters. Mm-hmm. Because it is kind of the conundrum here. You look at Rudy Gay and what he is as a player. He's a great NBA player. He's somebody that is proven. So here, hold on. He's proven he's a scorer. The problem is the way that he does it and how you find someone and pieces that fit around that. And I'll never take anything away from Rudy Gay, because he's got the numbers, he has the experience, he's a veteran in this league, he's been there, done that. He hasn't won yet, but a lot of players haven't won, you know what I'm saying? It doesn't mean that, just because you haven't won that you're automatically a crap player or anything like that. But he's such an ISO player and someone that needs to dribble himself into motion, and the term ball stopper is always used.
Yeah.
There's a lot of people like that. Carmelo Anthony is one of them. It's just, can you fit it into a system and with personnel where it doesn't kill you? Problem is, when you have two guys like DeMarcus and Rudy, both great scorers together, how do you get, that offense to not stall and to be productive all the time? So since Rudy has been out, we have seen, I think one of the best games I've seen in terms of ball movement for this team might have been against Memphis. And that was with Garrett Temple in the starting lineup. And it, to me, that was something that stuck out, because what they did is they moved the ball early in the offense instead of relying on, hey, we're going to get it to or Rudy as soon as we can, and then we're just going to expect them to do things. And that's where the offense stalls. And it's not just on those two, Nate, because the rest of the team, when you give it to DeMarcus or Rudy, you have to continue some kind of emotion, set some screens, space the floor. Don't just stand there and be like, okay, now it's your turn. And that's happened too much.
Maybe not with Rudy.
But it goes, I don't know what's going to happen in terms of the choices that they're going to make. And there's always the camp that says, hey, Rudy Gay needs to go. There's the camp that says DeMarcus Cousins needs to go. But whichever decision you make, if you keep them together, I don't know. I don't know how that works.
It hasn't worked together yet. And I'm just about tired of, I'm tired of trying with it. I mean, Rudy Gay, he's got an incredibly diverse skill set, but whatever. Like, it's not there. It looks good on paper. I mean, Katie,
it's also a little bit throwback, right? It's not really where the league is right now.
Yeah, and like a lot of the way that this team is constructed, you're right. He plays into that. I mean, he's a guy who's largely going to look to get his shot off the bounce from the 15 to, say, 22-foot range, and that's been shown repeatedly now to just be a low-percentage shot. I mean, it's frustrating. I think there's only room for one ball stopper, basically, is my point, and if you have to choose between the two of those guys, it's a no-brainer.
Yeah. I hear you. I know what you're saying. I mean, DeMarcus Cousins, obviously, and it's not easy with him either, Nate. You know, it's not.
I mean, there's flaws. Because the other part is, you know, he puts up 55 and 13 last night, and then maybe you do finally say, hey, you know, screw it. Let's say he gets the ball every play. We're going to try to do this every night. And that's when he goes out and, you know, puts up 40 shots and scores 30 points or something like that, just because he is trying to do it too hard and he doesn't have any help around him. So, you know, I get it. You kind of have to temper your expectations. This is not going to happen every night, but I found myself wishing it would. I mean, that's easy.
You know
enough,
what?
Right?
I'll take wins as long, I don't care how they come.
Right. Well, and you know, I kind of an underrated element of this too. The bench was absolutely fantastic last night. Go ahead. You took a deep breath.
No, you know, I was shaking my head. Yeah, I was shaking my head. And it's been something that has been a strength of this team all season. And I don't know if people have paid that much attention to it or understand that it's pretty impressive the way that it's been done. Because just like anybody else, like starting lineups, everything, there's you have to build a kind of flow and trust and rapport with each other, and you get used to playing with certain guys and you know them and you know where they want the ball, how they're going to play, if they're going to cut back door, if they're going to come off a screen, like you just get familiar with that. And the starting lineup has been changed so much this season. The bench unit in terms of who's playing with who, it's all been a constant shift this year. And no matter what, that bench unit has figured out a way to impact the game. And it's impressive.
Yeah, Anthony Tolliver seems to be kind of finding his footing a little bit. 11 points last night, 3 of 4 from beyond the arc. And another guy that, you know, Ty Lawson, Katie, is, I don't want to compare him too closely to Rondo, but I'll, you know, let me kind of walk this out a little bit. He's one of those guys that the stat sheet doesn't always show it, although it did last night, 16 points and 8 assists. But generally speaking, when he's on the floor, he finds a way to have his nose in the middle of all the action on both ends of the floor. And that's a guy, I mean, that's a good type of player to have running the point for you.
Yeah, so there was actually a moment there in the fourth quarter. I'm trying to remember exactly where it was. It was towards the end of the fourth quarter where he comes in, he scores a bucket. He goes down to the other end of the floor, grabs a defensive rebound in the paint, goes back down and scores on offense. That was a quick turnaround for the Kings and one of those, the kind of some momentum that they needed to build to be able to come out with that win. And he's done it. I feel like he's much better coming off the bench because of the guys he's playing with. It's just easier for him because, you know, Willie Cauley-Stein, he had that great, you know, pass to him last night for the dunk. It's one of those things where just the style kind of the guys that are in that second unit is more cohesive in terms of what Ty Lawson does best. And he's not a selfish player. He's a great scorer. He's been a great scorer in his career. He hasn't, you know, necessarily shown that side consistently with the Kings, but it's because when he's coming into the game, he's not just looking for himself. He knows that when he comes in, it's really not about him. It was about him in Denver. He was able to do it there, but he's done a really good job of trying to fit in with the people around him. And he's making some.
Kings get a big win. DeMarcus Cousins scores 55 points and gets unejected. We've covered a lot of basketball through the first, I don't know, hour and then some. So we're going to shift gears when we get back. We're going to head towards the old football gridiron, the footy place.
The footy ball.
Yeah, four down territory comes up next on The Drive, Sports 1140 KHTK.
That's Oakland Raiders quarterback and one of the seven members of the Raiders that is heading to the Pro Bowl, one Derek Carr. Seven guys. Aren't they about 15 guys short?
15? Don't you mean 46? There's 53 dudes on this roster, and every one of them is a Pro Bowler in my heart based on – no, I mean, that's pretty
says
rad.
Says the resident 49ers fan.
Well, I know. I listen. It's like I said early on in the show, this is – the type of, even though Pro Bowls are generally meaningless, this is the stuff that helps validate this season and make it real for Raiders fan that's still pinching himself and can't believe, A, that you've got a franchise quarterback, and B, that you're on the cusp of winning this division. You see stuff like that, and you're like, oh, my God, this is real. Like, the rest of the league even says so. We got a bunch of good players on this team.
Well, and the thing that I like, I mean, the Pro Bowl overall, I think, is kind of moronic because it's hard in football. I don't even like the All-Star game in NBA basketball because it's just not good. You know
right,
what I mean?
But at least they play basketball.
They play basketball, but this, you can't really do that in football. It happens before the Super Bowl, and football is such a dangerous sport anyway. You don't want to risk injury. But what I like about this is that it's a combination of fans votes, you know, executives, coaches, and players. Like, I like that it comes from everyone. So that right there just shows you the respect that this Oakland Raiders team has garnered this season. And it's, we talked on the show, Nate, when we started the season back in August, you know, early September, we were hoping maybe the playoffs. It is, they have proven everyone wrong, erased all that doubt. They deserve this.
Yeah, and I mean, that's all right.
Oh, you got cut off.
Oh, no, that's fine. No, because what's cool about this is that there's probably going to end up being more of them. Now, unless the Raiders get into the Super Bowl and all their guys end up sitting out, if something happens and they're not there, the Raiders are probably going to end up with like 3-4 more guys because right, everyone gets in as an alternate.
Mm-hmm.
You guys get all that?
Great, a great quality. I'm glad I listened to that.
Yeah.
I'll take the fall for that, by the way.
Yeah. Richard Sherman basically telling a reporter that he will ruin his career. Woohoo. Richard Sherman told the Seattle radio host that he would ruin his career at the end of a heated press conference. Did Sherman cross the line?
Yeah, of course he crossed the line, but it's Richard Sherman, so it's, you kind of expect it. The funny thing to me is that not only did the team get involved and take care of this, but Richard Sherman tweeted out, it was like a hashtag that he created, like hashtag Pete told me I don't have that kind of power. Like, you know, like Pete Carroll stepped in and was like, look, dude, like, shut up. You don't have any kind of say in this.
You don't have hiring and firing power. Yeah, he crossed the line. I mean, he even owned it afterwards. This is, you know, you know what you're going to get with Richard Sherman. He's going to be fired up, and he's still a little sensitive about the fact people are still asking him about his confrontation with Daryl Bevel on the sidelines. Because, you know, tell me if you heard this story before. Goal line situation, about a yard out, Seattle decides to throw the ball, and it almost got intercepted. And Richard Sherman decided to let Daryl Bevel know about it. It's been smoothed over in Seahawks circles. He keeps getting asked about it, and he was irritated by it. So he told this guy afterwards, he basically was tired of the questions, said, hey, man, you need to knock this off or I'm going to ruin your life. And you hear the reporter go, oh, really? How are you going to do that? And Sherman says, I'll make sure you don't get your media credential again.
Yeah.
Clean up your diapers. It's good.
That one might have been a little bit of a delay of game. The Giants and coach Ben McAdoo were fined and the team was down, or was, let me try that again. They
you
were
can
fined
do it.
And the team was downgraded draft position after McAdoo violated league rules by using a walkie-talkie to communicate with Eli Manning from the sidelines. Does the punishment fit the crime?
This is not my joke, but does my ass look fat in this punishment?
Oh my God.
So, no, I mean, that one's kind of tougher to answer. Like, does it fit the crime? There's no way that, like, what is the crime here? They fined him $150,000. They fined Ben McAdoo $50,000 compared to $350,000 and loss of a draft pick for the Falcons for piping in crowd noise.
But that's something, Nate, like with the Falcons, it's like, how easy is that to determine? It's not as easy to determine that they're piping in fake crowd noise as it is
to actually see
Ben McAdoo on the sidelines with a walkie-talkie. That's the most, like, yeah, you know, you had to know you were going to get fined. Everybody can see it. You're on national television. So you know what? The most important thing for them, they're like, whatever fine they're going to throw at us or whatever punishment, we'll take it, because this is the fourth quarter right now and we're trying to beat the Cowboys for the second time this season. They took it. They're taking their lumps and they're moving on with their win.
Atlanta Falcons radio network there with the final call. They were being friendly because they didn't mention the team that they absolutely trounced 41-13. Anyone want to guess?
Was it the Browns?
No.
Or no, maybe the 49ers?
They play in San Francisco. There's
no,
your
they don't.
Oh, no, they don't.
They do not.
No, they don't. They play in Santa Clara.
Well, there goes my Giants joke. Well, we haven't checked in with them in a while. Do the 49ers still suck?
Okay, so to be completely honest here, I'm going to go out on a limb and say yes. I don't even remember the last time I looked up 49ers news because it's so irrelevant right at this point.
I mean, that's where this was. I'm going over this last time, like four down territory. We haven't talked about the Niners in weeks, it seems like, and for good reason. So, yeah, let's check in with Chip and the boys, and it sounds like, hold on. Yeah, they still suck.
You know what's crazy? The most news that I've heard about the 49ers is with the firing of Gus Bradley and reading all the different articles about other coaches that are on the hot seat or who could potentially take over. Like, Chip Kelly's name is in every single article. That's the most I've read about the 49ers in the last couple weeks.
And you know, listen, I'm not going to sit here and say that I think that Chip Kelly is the next great NFL coach or that he's even the answer for the 49ers. But you look at this guy that... He's been a successful football coach everywhere he goes to some degree. He was amazing in college. He went 10-6 his first two seasons with the Eagles. And I know that's kind of an aberration. He's been very mediocre in the NFL. But my point is, with a guy with that kind of track record, I don't care what the record is. There's nothing to me that he could possibly do in one season that would make me say, oh, this guy's incompetent. He's completely incompetent. He's unable to in one season.
Yeah, I mean, I know it's tough to turn. It's tough to turn things around in one year when you've just got a bad situation all around. But
and I get it.
How much do you look back
but...
to Philly, though? But seriously, how much do you look back to what he did in Philly and say, well, you know, this is his second go around. Did he make it better there?
Well, no. I mean, my point more than anything is less to defend Chip Kelly here and more just to point out that firing a coach, especially an experienced one with a successful resume to some degree, after one season is pointless. Like, you haven't given him time to do anything at all.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think the real question is what's going to happen in the offseason with Trent Baalke. And if that's what happens and they do what we were hearing and that he's going to be out the door, do you give Chip Kelly another chance under another general manager? Probably.
Four Down Territory brought to you by Jersey Mike's. Visit their two Sacramento area locations at 624 Watt Avenue in the Arden Town Center and on Fulton and Marconi in the Town and Country Village. They bake the bread fresh daily, feature fresh made cold subs and fresh grilled hot subs. Get your subs served Mike's way with onions, lettuce, tomatoes, oil, vinegar, and spices. And if you need food for an upcoming party while watching your favorite team, Jersey Mike's caters. Choose from a variety of subs, salads, and fresh made cookies. When we get back, Darren McKee, it's DMAC 104.3, the Fan in Denver. We'll give him some hell about the Broncos on the drive. Sports 1140 KHTK. 7:34 on the drive. Time for a retirement checkup. Call David Hedger at Granite Bay Asset Management Group. 791-1737. I am Nate Goodyear. She is Katie Christensen, and she's not with me right now.
I'm always with you.
Right, yeah, I mean, from a physical standpoint, spiritually, you're here, but physically, your body's in Salt Lake City.
It is. It is.
That's where the Kings are playing the Jazz tonight, 6 o'clock tip-off on KHTK. We're going to be checking in with Darren McKee of 104.3, the Fan in Denver, here shortly.
Can I please say something before we turn?
Okay.
I love and hate the text line at the same time, and that's just how it is. But you always love to hear, you know, what listeners are thinking or whatever.
Kind of.
But on that last question about the 49ers, somebody, let me see if I can find it here. Somebody texted in and said, from the 530, saying the Niners suck is an insult to teams that suck.
that's a good point. Like, some things that suck are actually good. It does a disservice to suck to say that's what the 49ers are.
That made me giggle. But anyway, DMAC.
There. Yeah, and, you know, it's not quite Broncos week yet. So, I mean, cool down. You're not in a time machine. You didn't sleep through week there, Rip Van Winkle. But the point is, you know, the Broncos are in an interesting spot. They're having, I mean, you call it a letdown year, and that's really only in the sense that they were the Super Bowl champs last year. I mean, they're 8-6 right now, but they're in a spot where they can play spoiler the final 2 weeks of the season. They got the Chiefs in Kansas City this weekend on Sunday night, and then they're at home against the Raiders to close out the season. And both of those teams are going to have something to play for. The Broncos themselves have something to play for. I mean, they need to win out and get some help to get into the playoffs. So we're going to see how Darren feels about that team playing spoiler 1 year after a Super Bowl victory.
Uh-huh.
You know, kind of a tough break there for them. But, you know, D-Mac's a good personality, so we're going to get him on and ask him, you know, where are all the Pro Bowlers for the Broncos? Among those many, many other things. So looking forward to him joining us here shortly. And I want to remind you, too, later on in the show, we're going to have an opportunity for you to win 2 tickets to Trans-Siberian Orchestra on December 28th at the Golden One Center. Hallmark Channel presents. Go ahead.
That sounds Christmassy.
It is Christmassy. In fact, here's the name of it, Katie. Hallmark Channel presents Trans-Siberian Orchestra, The Ghost of Christmas Eve, for one day only in Sacramento. That's coming up later on in the show. Okay, kind enough to join us now, Darren McKee at 104.3 The Fan in Denver, the Broncos flagship station. Darren, Dave's gone today, so it's just me, Nate, you know, and Katie out in Salt Lake City. And it seems to me, Darren, I don't remember this real well, but early on, maybe before the season, I feel like you came on this show and someone asked you the idea, like, hey, man, you know, the Broncos, they are the world champs, but they lost a couple guys on that defense. They have questions at quarterback. Are they due for a letdown year? And you, to your credit, stood in front of your boys, and now here we are with 2 games left in the season. Exactly like you said, Darren, the Broncos in prime position to play spoiler for teams that are going to make the playoffs.
It is going to be so much fun when the Broncos win the next 2 games and they end up in Oakland as everybody is excited to wear styrofoam, and the Broncos beat the Raiders, and then they go on and lose to New England in the AFC Championship game. But when that happens, that is going to be just one of the greatest joys of my life. Write them off. Go ahead.
Yeah.
Write off the Broncos. Go ahead.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Well, D-Mac, that's going to happen just like after I leave Utah. I'm going to head up to the North Pole and help Santa with the rest of his gifts.
Listen, if you want to bring up poles and Santa, that's your choice. I don't know what you're talking about. I had nothing to do with nothing on that, but that's your private life, and you can have whatever private life you want.
I honestly don't have a private life. There's no such thing.
Oh,
but
I got grim really fast.
It got grim really fast. Oh my goodness. Well, this is actually interesting in the sense, like, first I want to talk to you about the Pro Bowl selections. Just trying to take your affiliation with the Broncos and Denver out of this picture right now. When you look at what the Raiders have been able to do this year, and then they get the 7 nods for the Pro Bowl, were you surprised there, or you're going to give them their credit where credit is due?
Oh, my God. All right. Enough. The Raiders are a good team. There you go. You wanted me to say it. There it is. They are a good team. And you know what? Even though Jack Del Rio did not have a great exit here in Denver, I love going for it on fourth down and 2 points, conversions, and being more aggressive with things. And they beat the snot out of the Broncos using 6 offensive linemen. I can't believe more teams haven't done that to the Broncos. Patriots basically tried last week. They just weren't as effective as doing it as the Raiders were. But, yeah, who do you stay away from the Broncos? Well, how about their Pro Bowlers, Aqib Talib, Chris Harris, and Von Miller? Well, there's a whole lot of field left after those 3 guys. And if you simply pound the ball and wear down the Broncos, you will eventually score. And, you know, the Broncos' offense is just horrific. And what they've proved, because the Broncos haven't forced a turnover in the past 2 games, if the Broncos can't generate turnovers, they are toast because their offense can't do a darn thing. So it's kind of a depressing situation, to be honest with you. And, you know, we suspected that Gary Kubiak's offense was not good last year, but everybody just sort of said, well, it's not good, but they're winning games. And, well, now we know why, really. And it was because of Peyton Manning.
Yeah.
And it's funny to say that because everybody knows he was not a good player as a player. But what you got to remember this from forever. the leadership and the sense of responsibility and all that, you know, that actually matters. It really does. Because without Peyton, boy, is this a sinking ship. And, yeah, they may. It is interesting because the Raiders may not have anything to play for the last week of the season. We'll see. I'm sure you'd want that number one seed because going to New England is – nobody wants to do that. But we'll see. They may not. And if the Raiders have nothing to play for, then what kind of effort do they really put forth against the Broncos here at home? So the Broncos may – you know what? The Broncos may stumble into another two wins. But they're not a good team this year. They're just not. They're not balanced. The offense is terrible. Trevor Siemian, he's an okay quarterback. But, you know, he's no Derek Carr. How about this? This is the greatest appearance ever on my show. So that is the reality of the situation here. So a lot of controversy and a lot of tricky things. And really, in all honesty, boy, you got to – my respect for Peyton Manning has increased this year without him playing.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a great point. As much as we ragged on him last year for not being the guy, you've still got this guy, Darren, that – has seen everything there is to see on a football field, and having the ball in his hands on every play, it's just not going to hurt your team.
Well, here's the deal, too. So after the game on Sunday, Gary Kubiak, for some insane reason, was soliciting opinions. He was having a group therapy session as soon as the game was over. Why? I have no idea. Russell Okung gets up to talk, and then accused the lead, who's threatened everybody. I mean, this is a guy who shot himself in the leg according to the Dallas police, and he's threatening to beat Harry Douglas's ass. He's yelling at Russell Okung. I mean, this guy is a live wire. So the last person in the world I want upset with me is a key freaking police. And so, now let me ask you this. If Gary Kubiak does the same silly thing, solicit for opinions after a loss, and Peyton Manning steps up to talk, at the same offensive performance, it's terrible, whatever, and Peyton Manning gets up to talk, do you think Aqib Talib is shouting down Peyton Manning?
No.
All right, how about this one? Jordan Norwood, who amazingly is still on his team, gets pushed in the back again by Aqib Talib. And do you think that happens with Peyton Manning in charge of the offense? Seriously. But do you really think Talib gets away with that if Peyton Manning is on that team? So there's these huge fractions. How about this? I'll give you one more. Harry Douglas tries to end Chris Harris's career with just a horrible receiver, limited talent. Harry Douglas, punk, should be a Raider. And Demaryius Thomas does a jersey exchange and takes his picture. Aqib Talib, again, got in a fight with Harry Douglas. And there's Demaryius Thomas taking pictures with Harry Douglas, switching shirts after the game. Again, do you think that happens? Do you think Peyton Manning grabs Demaryius Thomas by the scruff of the neck and says, get off the field? So I just gave you like four different examples of things that would have been different chemistry-wise if Peyton Manning was here. And none of them have to do with playing quarterback. But all of them have to do with being a better team. So my guess is with the Raiders, you have a better coaching staff, you have better leaders, and I think everybody, they should respect Derek Carr. I think he's got everybody's attention, and he's the real deal. You can win a Super Bowl with Derek Carr, and that's got to be exciting if you're a Raiders fan.
Well, and D-Mac, I got to ask you, you know, you bring up Derek Carr, and it's interesting to me because health is so important in the NFL. We all know that, especially to your quarterback. He has that finger injury on his you know, throwing hand, that pinky finger. And over the last 2 weeks, they've had to adjust the offense and change things up to kind of accommodate that and make sure that, you know, it's healing, but he's still impacting the game. How impressive has it been for somebody outside of, you know, Raider land to watch how they've been able to change and shift their defense, be able to positively impact the game and make a difference?
That's a thinking, and we all have to get to the lifeboats, but have you seen the fact that they're playing? You know, we're not paying attention to anything except grabbing a life jacket. But that being said, I'm impressed. If you're telling me that story, I'm not really aware of anything because I'm trying to save as many women as I can on the lifeboat, But all I can say about this, about Derek Carr, if that's the case, and I'm sure it is good, because he's the leader. He's the man. And, you know, whatever you do, don't go away from that. You have to adjust a little bit. That's a strong message to send. And I think the Raiders, hey, man, the Raiders have succeeded throwing the ball, in the ball, playing.
And we lose him.
Nate, we're losing him. Yeah. Well, you know what? It's nice for a change to hear D-Mac giving a little love to the Raiders.
Well, I know. I'm kind of like, I think he's going on the offensive here a little bit, almost like some reverse psychology, because now I'm on skates and I don't know how to respond to this. I mean, he's saying nothing but nice things about this team.
Well, I think that goes to the thing, though, is like you have to give all people in media, and regardless of what team you follow and what team that you're kind of affiliated with and that you're a fan of, you have to look at what the Raiders have done this year, and you have to give credit where credit's due. They've had an impressive season, and Derek Carr has so much to do with that.
Yeah, and I thought it was a great point too, that he was bringing up about Peyton Manning and his leadership. And you know, typically, Katie, like, I'm not, you know, I understand the need of strong leadership, but like generally speaking, I think a lot of things can be quantified, right? And so I'm not a real big fan of relying on things like intangibles to say, oh, well, we'd win more games, because of this thing that isn't even real. But I mean, those are just great examples. As we got Darren back here. Darren, you clear in the clear, man? Everything good?
Sorry about that.
Thought you might have been getting suppressed. You were being too nice to the Raiders.
I know. That's crazy. All right. I'll be more focused here. I'm driving up to the mountains and going skiing. In Colorado, when crap goes wrong, we escape to the Rockies. That's how I'm going to spend my day.
All right, so looking ahead, as Darren McKee of 104.3 The Fan in Denver joins us, Paxton Lynch waiting in the wings, we know that. Between the Broncos' struggles at quarterback on the field this year and however Lynch has developed behind the scenes, is this team's quarterback situation for the future any more clear than it was, say, 15 weeks ago?
No, it's a disaster. Yeah. And it's part of the problem with the Broncos right now is they've had some real issues in their personnel in terms of what they're trying to do. They tried to build their offensive line with Donald Stevenson and Russell Okung. That didn't work, obviously. And they've got a guy who was a seventh-round draft pick as their starting quarterback, Trevor Siemian. And you know what? He deserves to be their quarterback. And Paxton Lynch has had some opportunity. You know, I thought Paxton Lynch would take advantage of his opportunity, and he hasn't. Mm-hmm. So I think it's kind of a mess, guys, to be quite honest with you. And you're going to legitimately hear calls for Tony Romo to be considered. But that being said, Trevor Siemian has not been the problem here.
Yeah.
Trevor Siemian is a, you know what, he's okay. He's not great, but he's okay. So, but is he the future? I doubt it. Paxton Lynch's problem is I don't know if he's put in the studying. I'm trying to be nice here.
Yeah.
To really know what's going on. So I'm not calling him dumb, but I guess I'm kind of calling him dumb. I'm not trying to. But
if you're not doing your job,
by his own coaches for not knowing the playbook.
Well, and that's something that as a quarterback, that's 100% your responsibility. So that's on you. But I'm from the perspective of what's going on in Denver, you mentioned Tony Romo, and that whole situation in Dallas is, I was expecting it to kind of go in this direction, but I was not expecting it to kind of get to the point where he's saying, hey, just release me, because he wants to make the choice. But if you say that the quarterback isn't really the problem in your guys' offense in Denver, so does plugging someone like Tony Romo in make it a big enough difference where your defense again can just carry you when you have a decent quarterback and maybe not the best offense?
You know, good question. Maybe, but maybe 2 years ago. In all honesty, the Broncos defense, while the secondary, the no-fly zone, buy your socks today, while they are fantastic, and they really are. I mean, T.J. Ward, Darian Stewart, Akeem and Chris Harris, they really are the best. They really are. You got to give them props on that. However, the linebacking situation inside, not great. Von Miller, he's up there. You got to talk about him being the defensive MVP. But aside from that, the Broncos run defense is weak. They missed out on Malik Jackson. Boy, does that hurt them. And they got another guy, Vance Walker, who got hurt early in the year. Anybody can run the ball against the Broncos. And they should. Teams should just pound away. They'll have success. And, you know, so the defense isn't the same. So that's a good point. The defense just isn't what it was. So what's the point of bringing in an old guy? You're probably right about that. Sadly for the Broncos, we may be in this 8-8, 7-9, 6-10, 9-7 world here for a little bit. And that sucks. You guys know what that's like. Because it's been that way for 14 years or something. Or whatever it's been.
7-9 would have been great for most of those years.
Yeah, well, right, exactly. That's funny, right. So, but it's like missing the playoffs year after year. And the Broncos, I don't know, man. I just don't see it getting better anytime soon. And I got to – the AFC West is – I mean, boy, here I am giving credit to the Raiders again. But, I mean, in a year that the AFC West was the strongest probably in all of football, there are the Raiders sitting at the top of the pile. So, props to the Raiders because it's a strong division and they're the best team.
Yeah, I mean, it's just remarkable, Darren, how quickly things turn around in the NFL, whereas – right. You know, you've got this Bronco. The Raiders were nothing. 2 years ago, they were nothing. We didn't think they were going to win a game. And, I mean, even at the bottom of the division, you've got the Chargers who they stink, but, you know, they've got Phillip Rivers, so they can keep games close and steal one here and there. It's just I don't know that, you know, the Broncos did a little bit to regress, but it's just everyone just shot through the roof really quickly and kind of caught them by surprise.
Well, I can tell you why. I know why. It's because, well, you did hire a good coach, as it turned out. That was important. You really spent money on your offensive line, and you made the right decisions. And then you developed over time, and you had faith in and you were patient with a really good quarterback prospect who has turned into a great quarterback. The running backs don't matter. They fall off trucks. You can find them anywhere you want. If you got the right offensive line, it does not – I know you guys probably love your running backs and all that, and they're good. But
you're not wrong.
That's not a big deal.
Yeah.
That's not a – and wide receivers. Whatever with wide receivers. I mean, you can find those guys too, right? I mean, look at Tom Brady. Who are these guys? I think Chris Hogan was working at a Dunkin' Donuts last week, and then he's catching touchdown pass. Chris Hogan of the Patriots played lacrosse for 4 years at Penn State, and he's catching touchdown passes. So those positions don't matter, but your offensive line does, and the Raiders have done a great job. And developing a quarterback does, and I'll tell you this, and this is the hard part, and this is what Bronco fans, and I've been screaming about this on my own show, is listen, once you draft that guy, you got to play him, because Derek Carr doesn't get to where he's at until he gets a chance to fail every now and then, right? And if Paxton Lynch, everybody here wants to, you know, Paxton Lynch to be incredible right away, it's not going to happen. I mean, you got to sit there and win 5-6 games. Aaron Rodgers was on the bench for 3 years, and in his first year as a starter, he won like 5 or 6 games. He wasn't great his first year, even though he'd been in the league for so long. Everybody wants this instant respect, and everybody says, oh, Dak Prescott, look at Dak Prescott. Yeah, Dak Prescott is playing behind the highest-paid offensive line in the NFL, just loaded, just like the Raiders. And if I wanted to bet on the two teams that have the best chance of succeeding in the playoffs, I'd go to offensive line, and I would go with the Cowboys and the Raiders because they have the two best offensive lines in the NFL, period. And the defenses are good enough, more than good enough, very good, actually. So I would not be surprised at all to see a Raiders-Cowboys Super Bowl. How would you like that? That'd be something, huh?
I like it. That's Darren McKee of 104.3 The Fan. It is a bizarre expectation to put on a guy to assume that if he sits with a clipboard long enough, then he's going to step in and just be the perfect quarterback.
I don't understand it. And here's where I get yelled at all the time. We were in a situation in Denver with two young guys. Uh-huh. It's not like Trevor Siemian's an old guy or a veteran. So I was thinking, like, play Paxton Lynch. I mean, early in the season. Yeah, play him for a couple series. Get him some experience. Put him in situations where if he fails, it's not the worst deal. Well, you would have thought I was, you know, you wouldn't believe the names I was calling for suggesting something like that. And a lot of that comes from very old school NFL players that are used to just the one guy. Well, what do we see in the NFL now? We see an offensive line rotation very commonly, and you guys do that out in Oakland. Mm-hmm. You see players sharing jobs all the time. You see prescribed rest because the NFL season is brutal, and these Thursday night games got to go. And they're just watering down the product, and people are just tuning out. So you're going to, here's what you're going to see. You're going to see more rest for more players more often, and you got to figure out how to develop these young guys. I don't know how else to put it. The Broncos have got to be the oldest school organization in terms of their thought process. I mean, it is so frustrating. They are so old school with everything. And to Jack Del Rio's credit, he got burned in Jacksonville. He paid his penance here as a coordinator here in Broncoland. And he is not going to sit on his hands and not be aggressive. I mean, how do you not love that? The guy is going to be aggressive. So all those morons wearing styrofoam and face paint, they must love him. And I don't blame him.
T-Mac, we appreciate you making the time.
Thank God you guys got the 49ers.
Well, we're kind of trying to forget about them. Our big question today was, hey, do they still suck? Yes, they do. Moving on.
By the way, great job, 49ers, by not hiring Adam Gase. Way to go, 49ers. Way to knock that one out of the park.
Nailed it.
Was so funny. Do you guys realize how close the Niners were to hiring Adam Gase? I mean, it was done. It was done. Do you guys know that?
Well, yeah, and then Jed was just like, Jim's kind of my guy, so you want to be his offensive coordinator? You mean the janitor? No, thank you.
Yeah, I mean, I know for a fact, I can't talk about it on the radio, but let me just say, it was close, and then something happened that was kind of stunning at the last second, and the 49ers should have stood their ground. They should not have been influenced by what they were influenced by. I can't say any more than that, which is terrible.
Oh, my.
Well, we're not going to put you in a position to get yourself in trouble, D-Mac, but we always appreciate your time, man. And, hey, have fun skiing.
You got it, baby. I'm going to tear it up.
Yeah.
When everything sucks, we go to the mountains.
Too, man. Merry Christmas. Happy holidays. The whole deal, D-Mac. We'll talk to you soon, man.
All right. Hope the Raiders get blown out in the playoffs. See ya.
Stop.
All right. Take care. Yeah, we'll see. There you go. Listen to all the nice things he had to say about the Raiders. We'll be back with the final hour. Greg Papa joins us next on The Drive, Sports 1140 KHTK.